IVM. Hello and welcome to the Ganatantra podcast. I am Sariyu Natarajan.
And I am Alok Prasanna Kumar.
And we are very glad to be back to record season 2.
Absolutely. We have taken a refreshing break.
And a break from a break.
And we have had an opportunity to take some time off, do a little bit of research, agonize over what the next episodes are going to be and what you, our listeners, would like to listen from, hear from us.
Yes, and it's also given us the opportunity to reach out to some fantastic people who we hope to bring to the podcast over the course of the next few weeks.
We've reached out to some leading academics of India, of course, leading academics around the world. And also what we're trying to do with the next few episodes is to reach out to a group of people whom we haven't yet had on the podcast, which is activists. A lot of political movements are taking place in India. And it's not just enough that we hear from academics and journalists. Some of the people actually involved in these movements have a very interesting perspective that we'd like to share with you. So what we will be doing going forward is also getting on board activists, people who have actually worked within some of the institutions that we'll be talking about.
Absolutely, and live it in a certain way. In particularly one of the themes we hope to bring up over the course of the upcoming season is politics of the marginalized.
Yeah.
And in this, especially more so than perhaps the others, we would like to speak to those who are at the center of movements in thinking about both how political representation is sought and imagined, but also how change is driven. So I think this change is somewhat critical to how we are thinking about the podcast. Yes.
And also, given that this is a fairly large country and this is a country which has its own history of various kinds of marginalization, not to say that the episode, we have about 8 episodes in mind, not to say that these are the most marginalized or the most important marginalized or the most obviously marginalized, but 8 themes or 8 subject matters within the larger theme of the politics of the marginalized, which will tell you something interesting about the state of India in 2019. And not just the state of India in 2019, but how we got here. So we have about 8 episodes as I planned out. We want to do one episode which will focus on the politics of reservations.
Yes, and one episode that looks at marginalization within the NRC,
yeah.
Which is a very complex issue if you think about it.
Yes.
In terms of how it's unraveled, who it's excluded, and what it means for the rest of the country as well.
Yeah, and we also want to talk about Adivasis and forest rights. Some of you, those of you who would have been following the news, would have seen that there's an ongoing controversy of a case which is being heard in the Supreme Court about whether the giving land rights to Adivasis living in forests in any way affects conservation of forests and wild animals. And in a way, we want to sort of bring out how this further threatens to marginalize Adivasi communities and how they are responding to this.
Yes, and we also hope to look at Pasmanda Muslims and issues around representation for Pasmanda Muslims and of Pasmanda Muslims, in part because this sits very centrally in the context of some debates around intersectionality and intersectional marginalities in some ways.
Yeah. And another group of people whom we think have been seriously marginalized over the years, but are also now slowly beginning to organize and have a strong political movement, is the transgender community in India. Very often, we find that a lot of discourse sort of lumps together lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and so on together in one lump. India has a somewhat interesting history of the transgender movement, and we sort of want to talk about it in a very specific context too.
The transgender bill,
which has met with furious disapproval from members of the community for not adequately taking into account their concerns and in fact possibly making things worse.
True indeed. And we also hope to speak about political articulations of the Dalit movement, particularly looking at the representation of the Dalit Panthers in Parliament and the history of political parties that have represented Dalit interests across. And this is, again, not necessarily in a specific context, but in sort of the growing and evolving contours of political parties and the ideologies that they represent in India.
And speaking of ideologies, you know, there are any number of ideologies which have claimed to represent and speak for the marginalized, and perhaps none more so than Maoism. We have found in various shapes and forms that Maoist movements, Maoist insurrections, Maoist violence has taken place across vast swaths of India. And if you believe that politics is just violence in other forms, maybe we should just go to the violence directly. But also there is a serious ideological movement which has which says something about marginalization in India. And we hope to talk about that. How have Maoist movements fared in India? What has been the state's response to it? Who has been naturally attracted to these movements and where they are now?
Yes, and why violence is the political... If political representation cannot be offered or guaranteed, is violence what is sort of left as a movement of articulation?
Yeah.
I think our last episode in this theme around the politics of the marginalized will be around migrants and migration, speaking around some of the issues of urban mobility, claims of welfare, and trying to understand the ways in which migrants and imaginations around who is a migrant, who is an insider, who is an outsider, have really affected both the ways we think about policy as well as the way we think about politics. We hope to put that into context. As there are and continue to be nativist movements in different contexts around who belongs to a particular state and not.
Yeah.
So we're looking at interstate internal migration here, you know, and to unpack some of that.
Yeah. And we don't say marginalization happens only because of identity or is expressed only through politics in one particular way. If you would have sort of seen through the eight themes that we have chosen for ourselves, we want to cut across multiple ways of understanding marginalization. We want to understand the multiple responses, the political response that people have had to marginalization, how that has played out, how it continues to play out, and what we can expect in the future. And to that extent, our next theme is about institutions. What makes India's politics and democracy work is not just a few people doing things, but institutions working the way they're supposed to. And we have another series of eight episodes, which will look specifically at how certain institutions work and certain institutional practices, which have a very important bearing in the way in which India's democracy and politics work.
Indeed. And, you know, the process of institutionalization and the way certain institutions have been instantiated in certain ways is critical to how we think of our democracy. We're doing 10 episodes in this.
Sorry, 10 episodes. My mistake, yes.
The math is probably an issue.
Yeah.
But I think we want to start this by looking at something which traditionally may not be understood as an institution, classically thought of in the literature or in just imaginations of it. But we want to look at data.
Yes.
Which has become very much central to debates in terms of policy making, central to how we think of and critique the state as well, because transparency has been something that the central government and various state governments have been trying to practice and enabled in some ways by technology. And so we want to be very thoughtful about how we inquire and unpack data, which at the same time is political because of who it represents and who it doesn't. And so we want to talk about data, government data, and unpacking that as an institution.
Yeah. And then we will sort of step into, I think, the more properly understood institutions, the big giant buildings in Delhi that everyone associates with institutions. Of course, institutions are more than just a building. And given that both of us have legal training, obviously we're going to talk about the judiciary. Although, Sari, you probably disavows her legal training as being mostly worthless. No, but we want to talk about, to understand the judiciary, not just in terms of it's just a bunch of judges sitting there making laws, but how their interventions and how the functioning of the judiciary as an institution plays a particular constitutional role in our larger polity.
True, indeed. And I might try very hard to deny my legal training. I call it something in the long past, but the judiciary has been fairly instrumental and significant in affecting the course of politics, even in fact influencing electoral politics in some ways.
Yeah.
And we'd love to unpack that. But we'd also like to look at another institution which may not be so represented by buildings as it is by symbols as the army. And so we want to look at how the army has been something that has been imagined in multiple ways in Indian polity, even from the electoral perspective, as something that is there isn't representation of nationalism, either through, you know, through calls to action, like, you know, somebody standing at the border, how could you complain about a minor inconvenience, or something else. But what we would love to do is to unpack how the army has played a critical role in the imagination of India and in Indian politics as well.
And we come to two institutions which come into the focus generally once in 5 years, the Finance Commission and the Election Commission. And, well, the Election Commission is more well-known. It's not just every 5 years, practically once, a few times every year. But these institutions have come under much greater scrutiny of late. And so that probably has something to do with social media, that has something to do with the increase in media access. But we want to discuss one episode to discuss the Election Commission itself. It's supposedly a body staffed by bureaucrats and, you know, generally stays away from the media limelight, but it's not always been that way. It plays a far more important role in our politics than we give it credit for, and something that needs to be unpacked and talked about how the Election Commission's functioning, you know, sort of undergirds India's democratic structure.
Yes, the technique of the election is critical in making India a democracy. We'd also like to get into the question of journalism, which I suppose can be seen as a meso-level institution. Mm-hmm. We want to look at two aspects here, and this would perhaps be two episodes, where we look at very critically journalism and media and the role of journalism and media in the context of India today, questions of trust, belief and faith, because it is the fourth estate of politics after all, but also look simultaneously at the ways in which the contours of journalism are changing and the ways in which journalism itself represents political identity. So, and that's also something we'd like to unpack over the course of two episodes.
Yeah. I mean, we want to talk about not just the most popular subject these days, which is the state of journalism in India, but what does journalism do for the politics? What is it needed for? How is it supposed to function? And where we are finding, what prompts this lack of trust among, say, mass media in India? What are the structural features and factors which has gotten us to where we are right now?
Yeah.
And that's something that we hope to discuss. I didn't mention this in the course of my discussion, but we also want to look at the Finance Commission. I think it's one of those institutions which we assume exists and does its thing and goes away every 5 years. But its role is actually very political, but dressed up as technocratic. It has become more political in the last 2-3 years, thanks to southern states. But it was always fairly political. It's just that it was not a subject matter for open discussion, given that very few people understood what the Finance Commission does. And we hope to unpack this institution. I mean, one question whether it's an institution. It just comes into existence every 5 years, gives a report and goes away, doesn't actually impact anyone's lives immediately. But it is playing a very interesting role in how federalism in India works, how resources are allocated in India. And I think this is one of those institutions that needs much more scrutiny and understanding while we talk about Indian democracy.
Yes, and I think we'd also like to look at political parties as an institution and the way in which political parties and the issues they've picked up and their participation in the electoral democracy of the country has played a role in cementing some of our idea of India, as well as various subnational and regional identities. Unpacking political parties and in some ways the nature of political competition as an institution is something that might help us think through how democracy is not just constituted by elements of the process, but also participants in the process.
Yeah. And, you know, the surprising thing is that our constitution, in the minds of the constitution framers, political parties were taken for granted. They never actually mentioned them in the constitution until the 10th schedule went into place. And that has a certain impact on the way in which, you know, electoral power democracy has played out.
Correct. And, you know, many mature democracies have over time become bi-party systems.
Yeah.
With fringe players, if at all, on the outside. Hmm. But India, on the other hand, has several political parties, and the contours of that have changed, of course, over time, but has numerous political parties numbering in the hundreds, if not the thousands.
Yeah. And even if we just restrict it to parties which have at least one seat in some assembly in this thing, that number runs very large. I mean, actually unrelated to our episodes, but an interesting phenomenon is taking place in the UK where a purely two-party system is becoming a multi-party,
system, which is an interesting
in front of our eyes,
and also picking up on very interesting and novel identities.
Yeah.
And I recently saw this, and this seems to be we should investigate this at some point of time. But a Green Party of India,
Green Justice Party.
That's right. That's what they're called.
Yeah.
Is also taking shape, which is a very interesting phenomenon if you think about how political parties have evolved.
Yeah. One other institution, which is not a constitutional institution but predates even the modern Indian state, is the police. And
Police.
And it's taken for granted that this is what they are. But I don't think too many people talk about the institution as such. What is it that makes them play such an important role? Why is it that the role of who becomes the IGP or the DGP of a state, why is it so controversial? Why is it that there has been no real reform of the way in which our police functions? My pet peeve in this country is, why does India's police wear khaki? And it's not a sartorial question. It's the fact that khaki was meant to show that this is a militarized organization.
It is, indeed.
It's supposed to show that we are in charge and we are controlling you. Whereas around the world, you will find that most police forces wear blue. So, in a sense, what does that tell us about the relationship between the police and the citizens? And what is that which leads us to have so many problematic interactions between the police and the citizens and the state in India? This is something we hope to unpack. We want to look at that institution in and of itself, not just in terms of to change this in this way, but what is it? What is the police supposed to do in India? And how have they done it?
True. And what we also hope to do, it's not classically an institution, but has been representative of, or well, has claimed to be representative of at least some parts of Indian society, Bollywood.
Yes.
And look at their, in some ways, cinema as a lens on politics and how cinematic representations of politics have evolved over time.
Yeah.
The politics current cinema represents, and the participants in cinema, which is actors and their role in politics.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, to your point around the police and political control, cinema has played a critical role in showing the tussle between politicians and the police.
Yeah.
And I think police is something that I used to hear in old Telugu movies, where, you know, police as the people in charge, but at the end of the day, reporting to political bosses is a theme that constantly comes up in cinema, though that's not what we want to discuss. We want to look at representations of politics, representations of current ethos of society, and how that comes out in cinema is what we hope to look at.
Because cinema shapes, it's one of those few national institutions which, you know, shapes the way people think across socioeconomic strata.
True. And then the boundaries between films and politics have been quite porous, particularly in the South, where you have leading film stars being chief ministers of state. So N.T. Rama Rao and MGR,
not to mention Jayalalitha.
Of course. How can one forget?
So which is something that we'll discuss in some detail. Moving on from institutions, our final set of seven episodes will cover state politics. Now, some of you may recall that we had discussed individual states in the run-up to the elections and post these elections, or post the election results, mostly as a way of making sense of what might happen in the 2019 elections and what did actually happen in 2019 elections. But we want to take a very different lens to understanding state politics. We don't want to make it purely about which election is coming up and who is going to be standing for what and what they're campaigning on and who might win or who might lose. We want to look at the longer trajectory of politics in a state. What is it that is on the minds of voters? What are the political movements? What are the trends? What are the larger socioeconomic things going on in that state that sort of informs the way in which this particular state has, you know, evolved in a given way? Maybe we'll find an answer to the question as to why Naveen Patnaik has won 5 consecutive terms as chief minister, because Orissa is one of the states that we want to discuss.
True. I would think, though, that we would love to start with talking about the notion of federalism and particularly in the context of current debates around 370 notions of asymmetrical federalism, and putting that into context in the Indian state, but also looking at questions of how social movements have been central to state identities, how regional identities are formed and articulated through political means, and unpack all of that relationship between the idea of a relationship between a state and the center, which, I mean, India's federalism and federal model is fairly unique in that sense.
Yeah.
And we'd like to unpack some of that through one of our earlier episodes in this segment.
Yeah. And we can just sort of run through some of the states that we plan to cover. We hope to cover, of course, Karnataka, because this is a Bangalore-based podcast, and we realize that we haven't actually spoken about Karnataka politics at all.
Yes, and this is a hark back to our early avatar
of the Karnataka vodcast. We sort of want to talk about Karnataka politics, but outside a purely electoral lens.
Yeah, then we want to talk about Kerala,
which
is seeing some very interesting shifts and changes in its current arrangements, something that we'd like to probe a little bit more deeply. And I think Kerala also comes up for assembly elections immediately in the next year or so. And so this is again something we'd like to understand in a little bit more detail, particularly because Kerala and through the Sabarimala conflict has been central to imaginations of national politics.
Yes.
So we'd love to probe that a little bit more in detail.
Yeah. Punjab is one of those very interesting states, which is technically a North Indian state geographically, but seems to have a politics that is completely out of sync with all the other states around it. Punjab's politics, I mean, of course, there is a specific history to this. There is a specific background to this. But in terms of how Punjab responds to national events, whether we take Article 370 or other such movements, it's more in sync with South Indian states. There's something interesting going on there. And I think we'd want to explore the history and the politics of Punjab to get a sense of why this whole idea of North Indian states, Hindi belt states, needs to be problematized a little bit more.
True. And then we're going to look at two more central Indian states, Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh. Mm. But we're going to take a slightly different lens, pushing away from questions of regional identity into questions of welfare and welfare politics, looking at how state-level institutions and therefore, you know, linking it back to questions of federalism and the federal structure, how state-level politics influence the implementation of welfare programs and what that means both in terms of the political outcomes it produces as well as in terms of the development and welfare outcomes it produces. So we want to unpack this by looking at two states which, you know, are closely tied to each other because of their origins, but also offer very interesting avenues, methodological avenues for inquiry, because they have such a closely tied history. So we want to inquire into, you know, differences in the way welfare is implemented, what that means for how we think about subnational politics itself.
And speaking of subnational politics, we've seen three waves of state formation in India. We have seen states formed on linguistic basis, we have seen states formed on tribal identities, and we have seen states formed on sub-regional basis. Now, we discussed sub-regional identity in that episode with about Telangana and Andhra Pradesh, but we haven't really discussed the tribal identity. How did that go into the formation of a state? And Jharkhand, perhaps one of the states which will help us understand what was actually going on when, you know, Uttarakhand, Jharkhand and Chhattisgarh were created. Not to mention the other states which are carved out of Assam for purely tribal identities. You know, we talked about Nagaland and Mizoram and other states. So this is something to be, we hope to discuss in some detail as to what were the political movements which led to the creation of these states carved on tribal or Adivasi identities.
Indeed. So, you know, for this season, what we have upcoming are three themes, though we might choose to surprise you, but we have three major themes. We want to look at politics of the marginalized and bring it together in terms of understanding how marginalized peoples have been represented, sought, claimed, and found representation in the Indian political system, and the counter response in some ways. We want to look at questions of institutions. We want to look at a variety of institutions, and so some of the contours of how these the term itself is defined is something that we will work through over the course of the episodes. But we want to probe into questions of how journalism is understood, how the army has been instrumental in Indian politics, and questions of that sort. And I think we want to go deeper into understanding some of the political histories of specific states.
Yeah.
And these are states, I mean, even in the earlier episodes in the previous season, we did talk about state histories and how they influenced the elections. But moving away from the election cycle itself, what we hope to do is dig into states and understand them for what they are.
Absolutely.
And critique the idea of federalism.
Of course.
And, yeah.
And what that entails. So we have a very exciting lineup of about 25 episodes coming up. As we mentioned, we have some of India's leading academics. We have some of the world's leading academics. And we'll have journalists and we'll have activists.
And then you have us.
And you'll have us. You'll have us as your constant presence in all these episodes. And we'll be talking about all these issues and more to come in the weeks to come. So thank you for tuning in, and we're glad to be back.
See you every Wednesday.